Hello and welcome to episode 10 of the Cadaver Lab podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Sam.
We made it to 10.
Double digits, baby.
I think there's actually people that still listen to us still.
I know they do.
It's shocking.
I know. It's awesome, though. I love it.
You know, the funny thing is about this episode 10 is I barely got done editing episode 9 Saturday, and it's now Monday, so we've only had 2 days to let that one simmer.
But it's awesome because these movies are so good that I'm glad we've just been able to go right into it.
Well, hopefully I can get this out a lot quicker. Last week was kind of a bear.
Yeah, that's
for
right.
me, but what have you been doing this week?
Actually, I've been a little bit busy this week. So, you know what? It was interesting because I was out and about, and I figured out that there's a... do you ever wonder if you're lazy? Like, sometimes, am I a lazy guy?
Of course.
Okay, well, I developed a test to see if you're lazy.
Right.
So I'm driving down the road, and I come to the stop sign, and I look over, and I see this giant, obese, fat dude in a wheelchair.
Okay.
Now, imagine yourself looking at this fat guy.
Uh-huh.
If the first thought in your mind is, damn it, I wish I had a chair to carry my ass around, that means you're lazy. If you think, oh, that poor guy, then you're still good. But if you envy that chair, then you are a lazy sucker.
Oh, my gosh. Dude, he has a glandular problem, I'm sure.
You can call it what you want. Just don't envy the chair.
All right. Okay. Wow. That's a great way to start
off
the show.
I know. My wife was so happy about that because she's always like, I think you're lazy. And I just get pissed, but now I know I'm not.
Listen, honey, you don't have to cart me around in a chair just yet.
See, but I was on the borderline because the reason why I came up with the test because I was like, I wonder what it would be like to have that chair. But I didn't say that I wanted
you didn't
it.
Envy him.
That's right.
You know, I don't know. Tell me if this applies. I'll see those Rascal commercials and think, you know, I could use one of those.
Well, that's...
Damn it!
You got to be careful.
Oh, no, that's funny, man. Oh, so you've been busy.
Yeah, I did a lot of stuff. So I came up with a promo for us, which I think is pretty good. We decided that we had a couple of requests. We talked about it last week. So why don't we throw it out there? Why don't we put it on there and see what people think?
All right. And yeah, listen to this and email us. Let us know what you think. I think it's funny. Here it goes. Cadaver Lab Podcast. I am Mike.
And I am Sam.
Am I pathetic or
no,
what?
I think it's good because if you don't ask, you don't get.
Okay. Hey, can I see your Furburger?
People who refuse to abide by the common courtesy of returning shopping carts to their proper area should be boiled alive in their own urine.
Don't worry about shit, my parents have to be fast, man.
He gets the kick in the balls for this show. Yeah, maybe I should. Well, it's not we. We didn't drop any F-bombs, I don't think.
No, we did not.
Yes,
we did.
What?
I think I said vagina once. I'm not even going to try.
She started talking dirty to him in Yoda's voice.
Oh, you've given me the force.
Yeah, and then we're going to throw in a little bit at the end saying something like, check us out at cadaverlab.com or some crap. Let us know what you think. Obviously, we think it's pretty funny.
I got to tell you, I had so much fun making that. I was going through all of our stuff, and there was some really funny stuff. So
I'm glad. Well, we appreciate you doing that.
No, that's good. But also, this week, I decided to do some marketing.
You did, and you did a great job.
Yeah. Well, my idea was, how can we get more exposure for the show, get people... what I wanted to do was try and cram our voicemail box, like have outside forces and outside people contribute to the show.
Well, so, and that's actually a good thing this week, because since we only had 2 days for people to listen and get any voicemail comments.
Yeah, I got on the horn Saturday to try and generate it, and we actually got a couple of calls. So
let's go ahead and play those real quick.
All right, that sounds good.
Hi, Harvey. This message is for, I believe the pronunciation is Harvey Ferb, Erger. I hope I didn't slaughter that too much. This is calling from... I have heard that you've expressed some interest in our age. Hi, this message is for Harvey Ferb, Erger. This is Lance calling from A. You had some questions about our HRB product. Feel free to give me a call.
Hi, this is calling from Center. I was trying to get a hold of Ferb Herger. Give me a call back.
Hi, this message is for Cleo Torres. This is Missions Advisor with Keller University. I received your request for information last week, so I wanted to follow up with you and learn a little more about your area of interest, as well as answer any questions you have regarding our graduate degree program.
So it's a couple of people fail for that.
Yeah. I must be so damn bored at home. I don't know. It was funny because I just thought in the middle of the night, I'm like, I wonder if I could get someone to say that on our voicemail. Sure enough,
there you go.
So that was good. So Harry Furberger and Furberger.
You mean Harry Furberger?
Oh, that was some good stuff.
Oh, that was pretty funny, man. But by the way, we got one voicemail, even though we only had the 2 days. So let's just get them all out of the way.
All right, yeah,
here it is.
All right,
yo, Mike and Sam, Corey from the Midnight Podcast again, and just want to say thanks for playing my clip on the last show. I think you guys did a real great job on talking about the first two Hellraisers. And you know, the thing about those two movies is they do have that whole kind of real, kind of disturbing, spooky atmosphere about them that I think is kind of lost in the other sequels. But great job on that. Just a couple comments on other things. I agree with Jennifer Carpenter as being the lead in Quarantine, where I've never really found her very attractive. And to be honest with you, you know, I thought that Spanish chick in Rec was, you know, she had it going on, I think. I thought she was pretty cute. So, I don't know, that might just be me, but I thought the Rec chick was a whole lot more attractive. And your rant about theater talkers, I am right there with you. And, in fact, I put them on the same level as people who will not return their shopping carts. Again, should be boiled alive in their own urine. Thanks, guys. Keep up the great job. Later.
So that was Corey from the Midnight Podcast. That dude is cool.
Hey, it sounds like we hit a nerve with the movie talker thing last week. That's
well,
good.
It hit a nerve with me. I mean, I'm sure that everybody could tell that I was kind of bugged at that. I actually just listened to Midnight Podcast episode 106, and everybody needs to get over there and listen to that one. It's completely funny. There is one part where it's kind of disturbing. Root Rot gets back on there, and Corey and Root Rot discuss a magazine called Scars Magazine. And there is a story about a girl who, I can't remember, like Queen of Darkness or some kind of crap in there. Well, she's like a 300-pound lady who wears burlesque clothes, like really skimpy, whatever. And Root Rot was like, yeah, she's kind of hot.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, yeah, you have to see her to know that is not true.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah, it was a great episode. Corey did a great job. Also, Corey mentions the fact that girl from Rec was completely hot. I tend to agree. In fact, I pulled her name up on IMDb the other day. Her name is Manuela Velasco. And so I'm sitting at work, and I went to Google Images and put that name in there and hit enter. And apparently my search filter was off. Let's just say I was pleasantly surprised.
Wow.
I don't condone that kind of activity, but, you know, if just do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you do some Manuela cranking?
I was at work.
Oh, dude.
Yeah. But the answer is yes.
Wow.
I'm just teasing. Anyhow, you know, this week we were contacted by a couple of people out there who are actually doing great stuff in the horror genre on their own sites. I just wanted to mention a couple of people. I don't know. I don't think I emailed this to you. I got an email from Sean Gaborin. I don't know how to pronounce his name. From Angry Gnome Comics. Everybody go out, visit angrygnomecomics.com. He actually sent me a sampler. It's actually a PDF. He calls it the short stack. Basically, it's one writer who is Sean, 13 artists and 13 stories. It's actually, you know, comics. Each of them get 2 pages to tell a little story. And I've got to tell you, I am not a big comics reader.
Yeah, I don't
either. The only thing I've ever read really in comics was a buddy of mine sent me over some Ash versus Marvel Zombies. Which it's like Captain America as a zombie and Spider-Man as a zombie.
Oh, really?
It was kind of, you know, it was okay. But, you know, I don't know if I'm the best person to judge it, but I thought some of these were great. There were a few that were better than others, but out of the 13, I probably really liked, you know, 9 or 10.
Wow.
But I have actually sent this to a contributor of our show. And he has promised to send us... He's a big comics guy. It's Metal Mikey from the forums.
Oh, yeah.
Big comics guy. He's going to go ahead and take a look at them, give us a review on that, you know, from somebody who knows what they're talking about instead of me.
That's
and
good idea.
Don't worry, Sean. I told him that if it gets anywhere past his inbox that I'll sick Corey from the Midnight Podcast over to boil him in his own urine. So no, I just wanted to mention that. Sean's a great guy. He's been really nice to us. But yeah, go check him out at Angry Gnome Comics. One last thing. There's a brand new website called thezombiecombatclub.com. It's actually a really funny thing. They're trying to get real-life stories of zombie attacks. Now, that's what they claim to be trying to do. Yeah. Well, I just want to read real quick, and then we'll get into...
Well, I have something else to add to.
Oh, okay. Let me just read real quick. The Zombie Combat Club is a civilian outreach division of IUCS and is committed to the distribution of accurate, unbiased information to the public on non-ballistic offensive and defensive tactics to counter the threat attack from the living dead. And,
oh my gosh.
And the IUCS is a non-governmental policy institute whose primary directive is to assess, analyze, and distribute intelligence on the efficient neutralization of undead threats that present a substantial and grave risk to the human race. That sounds pretty official.
Yeah, that sounds pretty official.
Well, go over there. It's a great website, and there's a lot of stuff to do over there and read. And they've actually got a contest running right now where you can get yourself an audiobook. And just go ahead and over there. I've just been contacted by both these guys. You know, let's show them some support.
Yeah, that sounds good. You know, I wanted to go back on something that I had said last week about Dawn of the Dead.
Okay.
Said it was a little underwhelming.
Uh-huh.
I had an opportunity to go on my on-demand on cable, and they have this special called Fantastic Flesh. Did you check that out?
I haven't checked it out yet.
That is awesome. It goes into special effects and how they do stuff, more particularly in horror movies.
Oh, really?
So they did a segment on Tom Savini.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
And he was being interviewed and stuff like that, and they went over the Dawn of the Dead movie and how they did some of the stuff in there.
What's this called again?
It's called Fantastic Flesh.
I'm going to
check
that out
tonight. It's an hour long, and I watched most of it. It was really good.
Really?
Highly recommend it, because I was like, man, this is cool how they do this stuff. But they went through, and they were talking about how they did Dawn of the Dead special effects, and they had like freeze-frame pictures of like knives in the guy's head. And Eli Roth was talking about how, you know, he was disturbed, and he saw it, and he's like, this is the first time I've ever seen explosions of blood. And so they talked about, I can't remember what the gentleman's name is, but the guy right at the end that ended up leading the zombie up the stairs, he was a good guy all the way through. But they taught that his performance of a zombie was the best ever done. And
really?
They kind of showed it for a second. I'm like, you know what? That guy really did a really good job as a zombie. So I need to go back and say, after being away from it for a little bit, it really was a good show.
You know, I don't want to like give a shout out or some kind of a promo to a well-established horror thing, because I'm sure they don't need our help. But FearNet and On Demand is cool.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I have an extensive library of horror flicks, but I will still go to that all the time just because they're right there at my fingertips, you know, and just because I'm going to check that out, though.
Yeah, it's awesome. It was really good.
And they've also done like the 30 Days of Night prequels or something like that.
Didn't we watch one?
I think we watched
4-minute episodes or something.
Yeah, we watched it for a while, but then I got kind of bugged.
Well, they finished it. It's a half an hour long, all of them together.
So I was going to wait till it's a half an hour of me, you know, just watching one half hour instead of 4-minute segments, which is kind of aggravating anyway.
Right.
But no, that's some cool stuff. Do you want to get started?
Let's do it, man.
You know what? Let's go ahead and play a song.
All right.
All right, here you go. All right, so let's jump into the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, so this show we're going to go over Hellraiser 3, Hellraiser 4, and Hellraiser 5.
Yes.
So what were your thoughts overall on these?
You know, I have been pleasantly surprised with the Hellraiser franchise. When we first talked about, hey, there's 8 of them and we're going to watch them, I was like, man, I'm going to be seeing the same crap over and over. But I'll tell you what, getting through, now I watched 5 of them. Now I realize the last 3 are not as good as the
When you say not
5.
As good, you should say big shit balls.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you said that for us. So I, but that's probably what I'm going to be thinking. But I have really liked these movies. They come from different directions. It's not like a big, huge pinhead fest where you're watching a bunch of stuff. There's storylines to it. There's mythology to it. And they're coming from different directions.
In fact,
and I like it.
I actually liked all these. I'm not going to give them all a bone saw, but let's go ahead and get started.
Okay.
The first Hellraiser that we're going to talk about today is Hell on Earth. Hellraiser 3.
Jesus Christ!
Not quite. What did you see? The same as I. Appetite sated, desire indulged. A miniature of the world and how it will succumb to us. You enjoyed the girl.
Yes.
Good. So did I.
My child, what's the matter? What on earth's the matter?
I have to get him back to my apartment. Back to the window. But they just keep coming. They just keep coming.
Who keeps coming?
The demons. The demons.
Demons? Demons aren't real. They're parables, metaphors.
Then what the f*** is that?
Thou shalt not bow down before any graven image.
Came out in 1992. The IMDb rating is a 5.0. Directed by Anthony Hickox and written by Peter Atkins. Starring Kevin Bernhardt as J.P. Monroe, Terry Farrell as Joey Summerskill, Ken Carpenter as Doc Fisher. He was the cameraman in this. Paula Marshall as Terry. And, of course, Doug Bradley playing Pinhead and Elliot Spencer. I just downloaded a synopsis. Do you want me to just
read?
I'll just read.
Yeah.
You know, I figure, you know, we'll just read the synopsis and then discuss the show.
Agree.
I actually got this one from a guy named Judd Blaze at Old Movie Guide. Here's the synopsis he wrote. A sleazy nightclub owner purchases a strange, disturbing sculpture, which he soon discovers contains a mysterious ornate puzzle box. The box is a legendary object that promises the secrets of ultimate pain and pleasure, but is in fact a gateway to hell. Soon the box's new owner has unleashed the evil Pinhead, a member of a race of supernatural beings known as Cenobites. Pinhead proceeds to murder numerous clubgoers in an attempt to gain power and fully free himself into this earthly realm. He faces unexpected opposition, however, from a television reporter investigating the mysterious club murders. When she discovers the truth behind the enigmatic puzzle box, she realizes that only she can stop the carnage. However, she must not only defeat Pinhead, but his fellow Cenobites, including a barbed wire wrapped Barbie and the horrific CD head. Yes, CD head does indeed kill people by shooting CDs from his head.
Yeah.
There are actually a couple of other Cenobites in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, that's a pretty good synopsis.
Yeah, I'd say that covers it.
So, what'd you think?
Thought it was good. I liked how they set it up. You've got Joey, who is a girl.
Right.
And the way that she kind of found out, she kind of walks into it. I think she was, you know, looking to do a news story and trying to get more intensive stories, and they haven't been putting her on it. She ends up going to a hospital to cover something. And this dude comes in, and he's hooked together with chains.
Right.
And so the thing that stood out to me about this is he goes in the room there, and it's this big dramatic thing, and he's being pulled apart, and all of a sudden his head blows off.
Yeah.
Now his head blows up, and then they go pan over and they show a close up of the flat line.
Right.
And I'm like, probably unnecessary. They probably didn't need to.
You can probably assume that dude
flat-lined.
Is not coming back.
But anyway, so then we're introduced to Terry, who is this way over the top bimbo.
Right.
A horror, I guess. Right. Yeah. And so that's kind of how the story goes. But I like the flow. I like
more of a misunderstood wayward youth.
misunderstood because she's stupid.
Maybe. I was just trying to see what you
Well, but the funny thing is, yeah, you say stupid and all misunderstood. Well, then like halfway through, it shows her sitting down reading a Wars of the 20th Century
as
magazine.
If.
Did you see that?
Yeah, as if she's going to be reading that.
TV off at first because Joey was like, hey, go watch some cartoons. Oh, okay, yay. And then later she's reading this Wars of the 20th Century with the TV off. I'm like, come on. Let's get some continuity.
Right,
but,
yeah.
But no, it was good. I thought the film was a step up as far as the filmography goes. It just seemed like it was a little bit more high quality film.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. It was a little more polished than the other two. Well, you know, you got to realize too that this is 4 years after
right.
number two.
Hell and I think there were some technology changes that went on obviously between the last number two and number three because it was a step up.
My favorite part of the show was the character, basically anything to do with the character J.P. Monroe, because dude is a complete dick.
You know who he reminded me of?
No.
Our first episode, Ray Pye.
You're right.
Same
you know what?
Dude.
That you know what? That completely makes sense. The only difference is J.P. Monroe is spoiled rich. We find out that he actually killed his parents,
yeah.
you know, to gain their... to get his inheritance, mm-hmm. you know, and whatnot. But anyways, here's this guy, one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and not just because it showed a naked chick,
yeah.
is he completely has... He owns this awesome club. Apparently, it's like the best place. Did this take place in New York?
I'm not sure where it was.
I think it's New York, but I'm not sure. Anyhow, so, you know, he gives a wink to the bartender, points out this girl, and so the bartender, of course, goes into the cooler, picks up a rose, and there's like, freaking 20 roses in there. He takes it over to the girl, and, you know, J.P. Monroe, you know, he's, you know, kind of a handsome dude.
Yeah.
He's in shape, you know, sweet talker, takes her up to his room, and basically they get it on, and then right after she...
Well, let's just say that her bread was done.
Yes, they... there are no lumps or flour pockets in there at all because the bread was kneaded. Yes, I...
Okay.
Okay. But so after they get done, she's trying to talk to him, and he's just being an asshole to her. And half of me is just laughing. Like, dude...
What did you expect?
Yeah. So you're... Fail for it, girl, you, whatever. I mean, I don't think it's funny that he was such a dick to her, but... It made me laugh. I don't know how that works. I didn't think it was funny, but I laughed.
Yeah, I agree. No, I did the same thing.
But anyway, this is one of the intro parts to when Pinhead starts to be resurrected. I can't remember exactly how it happened, but Pinhead gets a hold of her. I think she gets too close to it, too close to the statue.
He drags her over.
Right. Well, with the chains.
Yeah, the chains come on. Chains right. come flying out.
And basically, it strips all her skin off. Basically, what would you call it? Like a column?
Pillar. Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of ingests her.
Yeah.
It freaks J.P. Monroe out.
Yeah.
And, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, you see Pinhead's face as stone in the pillar. But once he gets that little bit of nourishment, you know, he can talk. You know, his face can move. And he's sitting there talking to J.P. And he's like, we are the same because we both enjoyed her.
Well, no, he goes, did you enjoy the girl?
Oh, right.
And JP goes, yeah. And he goes, as did I, or something like that.
No way, man. We're not, you're evil. Oh, how uncomfortable those words must be on your lips.
Yeah. Oh.
This, you know, this had some great, great dialogue.
Yep.
You know, and the thing is I don't know if I dare say it had great dialogue, but it had some great lines.
Pinhead always has great dialogue.
All the movies,
1 through 5, I laugh. Like, and I wrote down a note during that part that he is the greatest salesman in the world. That guy, he can talk people, and it makes logical sense, everything he says.
That's right. Even though it's completely twisted in your head, it's logical.
I find myself walking towards the TV like I want to be ingested. He talks me into it.
You know what? Do me a favor. Don't be around when you do that because I don't want to see your clothes get stripped off and then your skin.
All right.
And then there's your wiener flipping around like a Hollow Man.
A real life junk alert. That would suck.
All right.
All right.
Sorry about the whole wiener thing.
Sorry.
I'll cut that out.
Yeah, sure you will.
Yeah. What are you talking about? I cut
everything. Like, yeah, you cut everything out.
Are you still mad that I didn't cut out the part that you don't know who Doug Bradley was?
No. I haven't been getting any more emails on that, so hopefully I'm making up for it.
That's true. you know, this is actually a little bit different of a Hellraiser 2, because Pinhead and Elliot Spencer actually become separated.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember exactly how Elliot Spencer explained it, but he said something like, well, you know, I'm not there anymore. You know, he has no human characteristics anymore, so he's there to do as he will, whatever he wants.
Yeah, it was kind of a hazy explanation.
Exactly.
One that was necessary to make the movie the way it was, but I kind of was like, I really didn't follow that great. It didn't make as much sense as I wished it would have.
Well, you know, and I will say one thing. I do like the character of Elliot Spencer. If for no other reason, then it's wild to see Pinhead not as Pinhead.
Right, right.
You know, and he actually has a lot of time in this. Elliot actually tries to contact Joey and try to get her to pushed in the way so that she can end up defeating Pinhead.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, and he becomes a sympathetic character, but in the back of my mind, as I was watching it, you know, I keep thinking, because every person that's introduced as opening the box is looking for, like, perverse pleasures and stuff like that. And so in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, he was one of those. You know, I don't know what he did in his life to get to that point where he wanted that perverse pleasure, but he did.
But let's put it this way. He had the chance to try to redeem himself.
Don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm like, oh, he's a bad guy, because he is a sympathetic character. I'm just saying that was kind of in the back of my mind. It's like, well, listen, dude, I mean, you open the box, right? Everybody knows what happens when you open the box.
You know, and I thought, I kind of had the same idea, except for I kind of thought that here he is trying to redeem himself. And that's all.
And he did.
You know?
He does. Yeah. I thought it was good because they introduced more Cenobites. You know, it's new. Yeah. Instead
well,
of this kind of the
last
same
crop
people.
Died.
Well, they died, but it was the same ones. You know, you think that they could have taken the liberty in number two to introduce maybe some different Cenobites, but they were kind of just the same ones rehashed. So I thought it was good that they were able to say, no, this is grotesque. We can actually see the camera under the dude's skin.
Yeah, that was he was a great Cenobite.
Yeah, he was good. A little bit
cheesy,
corny,
yeah.
which took away from the scariness for me, because we talked about horror comedy, and I think there's a place for that, but then there's over the line, like, corny lines where, like, you kind of roll your eyes like, dude, seriously, that's so cliche.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, here's how I think about it. They need to come up with a whole new group of Cenobites, you know, and they kind of do this throughout the rest of the films. The other ones, I think, were more classic, like the female. Then you got the Chatter, then the Butterball. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they're only classic because they were the originals.
Yeah.
But I guess Butterball was kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
But the female one was creepy as hell.
Yeah. No, I think they do, and they are. And I think that they do a good job this time realizing, okay, you know, let's create some different monsters. Let's do it.
We had that. We had the camera guy. We had he was a DJ.
Yeah.
Pinhead started.
That guy was pretty calm with all the shit hitting the fan until the CDs went up over his head and then started clowning.
I seem to remember him just like being worried about his stuff.
Yeah, he wasn't worried at all. And then all of a sudden the CD, everybody's running around screaming. It's been going on for a couple minutes. And then all of a sudden he's like kind of looking around. And then the CDs go up above his head, and that's when he gets worried.
I actually saw that, and I'm like, you know what? I wonder if that's possible. So I took a couple of CDs to work and started throwing them at Jeff. I did not lodge one in his head. Not one stuck.
I'm not surprised.
So that's maybe I didn't have the power of hell behind my arm.
No, you didn't.
Well, that's too bad.
I thought. Let's see. Is there anything else? One thing I did notice about this was it just me or was Pinhead's voice not as scary as in the first two?
You know, I don't know.
They didn't distort it like they did in the first two.
Really?
And then I was watching 4 and 5, and I was like, I think that's more distorted than it was in 3. 3, it
you
just
know,
did
I
not
did,
seem.
I did notice in 4. That it was very distorted. In 5, I thought it was normal, but 4 seemed to be a little more distorted to me.
It just kind of seemed like they didn't do what they did in the first two, which just made it scary.
You know, to be honest, this one wasn't nearly as dark as the first two.
No.
I mean that the tone was dark and the theme was dark, but really, it wasn't as bleak.
Now, there's stuff going on in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
Which I guess there kind of was in number 1, stuff in the middle of the day, but you're right, it wasn't as dark.
No.
As the other two.
This show, I mean, is there anything else we want to say about it? I don't know.
Well, I've got the 6 degrees and what did I learn.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and why don't you hit us up with those.
So things that I learned from this, one thing I really learned is how much I miss hair bands. There was a lot of good hair band action going on in the clubs when Joey would go
check
out at JP's place.
You know, one of those bands was Armored Saint. And
oh,
I actually
really?
Have a lot of Armored Saint.
The second thing I learned was the dumbass bimbos are tasty.
Delicious.
Yep, got that. Prostitutes enjoy history, which we saw Terry read the 20th century battles.
All right.
And
it's a little known fact.
I know. Who would have known? And that humans can be jukeboxes. Those are the things that I learned. All right, so 6 degrees, I have Terry Farrell, who played Joey, was in Back to School with Robert Downey Jr.
Back to School?
With Rodney Dangerfield and
like the one where he jumps on 15 boards?
I think so, yeah.
Diving boards?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, but Robert Downey Jr. was in there, and he was in Good Night and Good Luck with Jeff Daniels, who was in Dumb and Dumber with Jim Carrey, who was in The Majestic with Bruce Campbell.
That's right.
Yeah, baby.
All right.
And on this, zero mammary count.
Only because they were needing
the
bread.
They were needed. Yeah, the bread was done. That's why it was zero.
They showed everything but the mammaries, practically.
Yes.
And
yes.
It was... Well, so what would you give this on our scale of bone saw?
I would give it a bone saw.
Would you? Okay.
I would give this one a bone saw.
Wow, okay.
Yep.
I'm actually a little less fond of this movie. I actually put it somewhere between Redbox and Buy.
Okay.
Because I would rent it to see if you like it, mm-hmm. and then buy it. I don't know. I mean, me as a collector, and I, you know, I'm all OCD about having all these stupid movies. You know, I would buy it. Mm-hmm. You know, but I don't know, for the average horror fan, or you know, if you're not a horror fan at all, this is probably an AMC. You know, my wife thinks this one is... She watched all three of these with me this week, which
she's
amazing.
A trooper.
Yeah. I asked her what she thought, and she was like, yeah, if it were on TV. But I think her point was that if it were on TV, it would be a little less graphic and
right.
little, you know, the language would be cleaned up a bit and whatnot.
Yeah, so. I just think with the creativity of the Cenobites and stuff like that, for me, the story was really good. It was somewhere different than what it was before. You've got the resolution of where Pinhead came from. Uh-huh. So for me, yeah, I think it's
a
bone
saw. It did give a lot of background on Pinhead.
Yeah.
That deserves some recognition.
Well, don't let me change your mind. I'm just telling you from my point of view.
I've seen this movie quite a few times. And, you know, I mean, it's a good watch. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did like it, but I would say between Redbox and Buy.
Cool, man.
Oh, by the way, I wanted to mention, I think that's the first movie that we didn't spoil that we've reviewed.
Nice.
Yeah, we actually did it.
That's good.
So, Hellraiser 4.
You were going to ask me something, though. What is my overall...
Oh, yeah. What's your overall thought of number 4?
I thought number 4 was the weakest of the ones I've watched.
Okay, me too.
Okay.
And I can't say that I hated it.
No.
Because it was interesting. Basically,
I just felt like they kind of crammed another storyline in that I really didn't care about.
Well, they did. This was a big departure from telling the story of... You know, other people and how they interact with the mm-hmm. Cenobites. Mm-hmm. And this is actually the history of, you know, the Lament configuration and of the demons themselves.
Yep.
This one was called Bloodline, Hellraiser 4.
Le Merchant. The bloodline continues, Toymaker. I'm restless. And you're bored. I think we should see America.
Screw America.
Then I would like your permission to go by myself.
No.
Don't you want to know why I'd like to go?
No.
Is that your final word?
Yes. Yes.
Oh!
Jesus.
Jacques, do you remember Delisle's lesson?
Perhaps it was a bit hasty.
Enjoy. You broke the number one rule, Jacques. You tried to stand in Hell's way.
What are you talking about?
The Toymaker's bloodline has survived. The box. America. Oh.
came out in 1996, and this actually only got a 4.4 on the IMDb. So to this point, this is the lowest. It was directed by Kevin Yeager, but actually, in the movie, if you were to look at the credits, he puts his name down as Alan Smithy.
Oh, right. That's what
Brian from the Drunken
Zombie
was telling us
that.
And I found a little, just a paragraph here on why that was. The film was re-edited without Kevin Yeager's consent by Dimension Films. Yeager substituted substituted his name for the Directors Guild pseudonym for a generic director, Alan Smithy. They actually called in director Joe Chappelle to reshoot large amounts of the material, and many viewers found the film difficult to follow. Mm. Anyway, so basically they went in after, I mean, I don't know if it was completed or not, but they reshot a bunch of stuff, re-edited it, and Kevin Yeager didn't want anything to do with it after that. You know, I wonder how much...
Can we blame him, though? I mean, you look at it, and we say it's the weakest.
Right.
We don't know what he did before, but you'd think a guy like that would know what's good and what's not.
Then there's a lot of shitty movies out there that directors love to put their names on.
That's a good point.
But no, I mean, I'll buy that. You know, I understand why he wouldn't want to do it. But it was written by Peter Atkins. Starred Bruce Ramsey as Philip Le Marchand, John Merchant, and Dr. Paul Merchant. It had Valentina Vargas as Angelique, Doug Bradley as Pinhead, and Kim Myers as Bobby Merchant. You know, I'm just going to read the synopsis. In the 22nd century, Dr. Paul Merchant has created the ultimate space station for a special purpose, to destroy the Lament configuration, which has brought silent shame to his family for centuries. In the 18th century, French toy maker Philip Le Marchand built the first puzzle box. And I'm not thinking I'm cool saying Le Marchand.
You got to do it right. You got to be true to the film, man.
I just don't want you to.
We don't have to put Alan Smitty for you on this episode.
I might. I'm completely embarrassed. Anyway, let's see, where was I? French toy maker Philip Le Marchand built the first puzzle box, which is used by a French magician to create a beautiful demon named Angelique, the daughter of the Leviathan, the Lord of Hell's Labyrinth. As the generations passed, Le Marchand's descendants began the work to create the Elysium configuration, which is a box that would destroy the Lament configuration until 1996, when one of them, John, nearly fell to the power of the box through Angelique. Of course, Pinhead and his Cenobites aren't happy with the fact that the gateway to hell will be destroyed. And that was written by Will from IMDb.
Nice.
So basically, this story is the history of the Lament configuration. You know, like it said, started in 18th century France. Actually, it starts out in the spaceship. It shows Paul Merchant, who is trying to attempt to open the Lament configuration with some nice space robotic technology and
Paul, who strangely looked like Sigourney Weaver in Alien Resurrection.
They had the same haircut.
Yes, they did.
You know what? I don't know which one I'd bone. Probably neither.
Well, let's talk to the twins about that.
Yeah, exactly. Holy hell.
I think it's funny we write down the same stuff. Because we don't compare notes.
No, we don't.
We go watch the movies, we come together, and we don't talk about it before we get on here so that we're not ruining our stuff.
Right.
And so we get on here, and it's funny because Michael says something like, there's something the twins said that we got to get to.
Yeah.
I look down at my notes, I'm like, yep, I know what that is.
Exactly. Well, you know, we try to keep it fresh so there's actually genuine laughter.
Yes.
But it's all the same shit.
That's right.
So it ends up just, we fake it all anyway. Yeah. Just teasing. So the toy maker... The original toy maker puts together this box, takes it to this French noble who creates one of the hottest chicks in the world.
Yep.
A demon.
Yep.
And basically, the story follows her and her quest to try to take out Merchant's family line, who is actually trying to come up with a way to destroy the Lament configuration and to make sure that this doesn't happen anymore. You know, I'm going to throw in an I learned quick right now.
All right.
Well... I'll tell you, I'm going to throw in a I need to learn right now. I need to learn how to make a hot demon chick.
Well, didn't you take notes on what they were doing?
No, I didn't.
You know what's a funny thing about that part? What? When Le Marchand brings the toy thing, the box, to these guys, and Jacques, who is the big brother on Step Brothers and a complete dumbass, Adam Scott. Anyway, I love the guys. He's good at what he acts in. But anyways, it's funny because as... It shows Le Marchand watch them skin Angelique.
Well,
Because she's not Angelique. Yeah, she's a hooker in the beginning. But so they show Adam Scott, Jacques, kill her.
Uh-huh.
And then they show in the shadows them, like, cutting her skin off.
Right.
And then they hook it with hooks hanging over, and then he opens the gateway to hell. Well, as he's opening the gateway to hell and somebody's slipping into the skin,
right.
It shows a close-up of Adam Scott hiding behind the corner, terrified. And I'm like, dude, did you not know what the hell was happening? You just skinned somebody.
Right.
You just hooked them with hooks, and now you're looking scared? What the f*** did you think was going to happen?
Well, let's put it this way. You know, I think the feeling is that they were kind of powerless. They didn't know it was showing up. There's this demon from hell that's going to show up here, and they didn't know what to expect.
All I'm saying is get your face on like that when you're taking scissors to someone's skin. I mean, seriously.
You know, and there was and it was funny because the old magician guy even looks at him and says, "Don't be frightened. Remember your lessons," or whatever.
Yeah, if you control the demon, whatever.
Yeah.
He lays down the law. If as long as he doesn't get in the way of hell, then he controls a demon.
Which, maybe it's harder than I thought. Maybe I don't want to bring by a demon.
Yeah, dude, you got to watch your step like crazy, like what happens with good old Jacques.
Yes,
exactly. You need to watch your step.
After that happens, the toy maker goes home and actually talks to some kind of a doctor or scientist. And he's like, well, you know, if you created the box to open the hell, then you need to create a box to close the door to hell. So that's when he goes in and, starts putting together the Elysian configuration.
Well, it's a little fuzzy on, and this is part why I didn't like this movie as much, was that this guy didn't know he was making a box to hell. So how do you design it?
Well, exactly. And this was my main beef with this show.
Yeah.
He goes home, he starts drawing this box, and then he draws a bunch of squiggly lines in the middle as if, I mean, it's not like it says what they're supposed to do.
Right.
We end up finding out that it's going to try to create perpetual light, you know, or something like that. And how did he know that was going to work?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I just didn't. He didn't know he was making a box to open up hell, first of all.
Right.
He just thought he was taking it over there. It happens that it ends up opening hell.
Right.
So, yeah, how was he going to know what was going to close it?
No, and that's my... That's,
and then to take a six-year-old crayon drawing and say, this is it, Eureka!
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
I didn't
fairly
like
big plot hole, in my opinion. And that's... It's just... It was hard for me to overlook it.
I am the same.
You know?
Because they based everything
they
on it.
Did in fact we end up, and this is a spoiler alert, so
damn it, we did
you
one
know, you know what the funny thing is an aside, I called the Midnight Podcast voicemail of death line.
Uh-huh.
And I talked about quarantine.
Oh yeah.
And on the voicemail I said, okay, spoiler, and this is a real spoiler because I'll say it again, the ending of Quarantine was right on the commercial and blah blah blah, you know. And some guy in their forum got all mad at me.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So if you don't want this movie ruined, then fast forward for a while. You know, we'll put us...
Actually, let's play a joke on those people and let's be quiet for like a minute and a half, and then we'll start talking again. Because then we're going to ruin it for them anyway.
Yeah.
All right, let's not do
so
that.
Damn just, funny.
I know, I'm hilarious.
Anyway, so we find out that Dr. Paul Merchant, who is originally we see that looks just like Ripley with her shaved head in Aliens 3, he created that whole spaceship as the Elysian configuration. That's how they end up saving the day. How did some guy in 18th century France draw a bunch of squiggly lines and all of a sudden, boom, perpetual light? Because, you know, there was kind of three main stories. It was the French, then it was the one in the middle where it was John Merchant, who was an architect, an award-winning architect. And he actually does a little bit to kind of computer, put the design to some computer technology and, you know, run some tests and whatnot, but...
Now, wasn't this a continuation of number 3? Like, where the box ended up at the end of number 3?
I think you're right.
The only problem with it was, is where it ended up in number 3, it was in the ground, and then Angelique actually
pulls
busted
it out of the
through
wall.
A wall, so... But,
you know,
but,
I thought the same thing, but again, I gave that one to...
Yeah, that's fine.
Because in number 3, it ends up, it goes into some cement, like, on the ground floor.
We ruined it anyway.
On the ground floor.
Yeah.
And so in number 4, Angelique goes to the basement where she takes some dude, some poor guy, man. That guy just looked nice.
Yep.
Going to have a good time.
Yeah. And he was in number 5.
What?
He was, I think he was a cop in Number 5.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
even notice. I recognize
him
because I watched them right after each other.
Yeah. Anyway, so she punches like this cement cylinder or cement wall and pulls out the LeMay configuration.
Yep.
Anyway, that was too big a plot hole for me to overlook. And that's my main complaint, that there were a lot of great scenes with great effects in it. You know, maybe a little cheesy again. But
yeah, it was. I mean, it was okay. Like we're talking about, for me, it's the weakest one I've seen yet. It's probably going to be Oscar worthy after I watch the last three, but
the last two especially.
But you know, with that being said, I've had high expectations, and I loved 5, which we'll get into. But
yeah, me too.
You know, there's some things. The one thing that was great, the Pinhead said in this.
Yeah.
He said, "I am so exquisitely empty."
Yeah.
I loved that line, and I thought that the voice in this one was scarier than the 3.
Was.
I actually took a note. That was the case. Now another thing that I had a hard time with, though, was at the end, and we are going to spoil this, when they've set up the configuration to close the door from hell, and Pinhead's talking to the hologram.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you know, Pinhead has been this notorious demon that's just evil. And it's like, did you seriously pull one over on him?
Well,
and the other thing is even if he didn't pull one over on him, that it was a hologram, What did Pinhead think was going to happen with the guy standing there?
Right.
The same shit was going to happen. It was going to blow up and send him back to hell, no matter what.
And the thing is on that part, Pinhead has mentioned in previous sequels that he could smell your innocence, or I can smell this, you know, whatever. And I thought, well, he's not smelling anything off that hologram.
He's talking to him, then he all of a sudden looks shocked when it's going to blow up, and it's like, it was going to blow up the whole time, man. The whole time, whether it was a hologram or a real guy committing suicide.
Right.
So I had a hard time with that.
But there was a couple of saving parts of this movie, and that's why I won't completely kick it in the balls. By the way, I forgot to give the kick in the balls to J.P. Morgan in episode 3.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
That dude, I should have talked about this when we were talking about episode 3. One of the funniest parts in that one was when that girl's all pissed off. Who do you think you are?
Oh, yeah.
You know, blah, blah, blah. And he just looks at her and starts flexing his biceps. That is the only time I would give someone a kick in the balls as I was laughing.
Only because you've done that.
No. Oh, yeah. That was funny.
Yeah.
There was one great line that you didn't mention. There's this one part where there are two twins, two twin security guards, and they're all scared to be apart, and you know they end up going down this secret corridor of the building, you know, because they are security guards at Merchant's Building, and they're walking down this thing that's not on the map. But all of a sudden, they find Angelique and Pinhead. Pinhead just is like wasting them. He's like, "Oh, I can hear your thoughts. I don't want to be away from my brother." Blah blah blah. So basically, what he does is he makes sure that doesn't happen, and he twists the flesh on their heads together. And basically creates one giant two-headed Cenobite. But before he does that, he says, I can't remember exactly how it came up, but he said, "Pain has a face. Allow me to show it to you."
Oh, yeah.
Dominated.
Yeah.
One really interesting thing that I found, and this is actually something that did save it a little bit for me too, is, you know, in the middle story, when, you know, it was in 1996, when we're in John Merchant's building, and, you know, he's fighting for, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. Well, Angelique shows up. You know, she's trying to hit on him, trying to do all this, you know, trying to make sure that basically they both, Pinhead and Angelique, want to get his soul. And Pinhead and Angelique actually argue about how to do it. And she's trying to get him through lust. Pinhead's trying to get him through fear and terror.
Yeah.
And they actually get into a little bit of an argument about it. And she, you know, there's like this Hellraiser dog on it, you know, that would just eat scraps of flesh. And Angelique goes to Pinhead, you know, "You're no better than this dog, you know." And, of course, Pinhead's like, "Well, we don't have time for your games." I thought that was pretty interesting.
You know, it was, but the only thing that took it back for me was I kept asking myself the question, and I wish they would have got into it. Pinhead kept calling her princess.
That's true.
I'm like, princess of what?
You know what? And
why can't you tell me the story and at least, like, do a flashback or something? Why? What is she a princess
you
of?
You know, and it doesn't mention this in the movie, but from what I just read, it said that she was the daughter of Leviathan.
Okay.
Who was the king of hell.
All right, well,
but you know what? That wasn't mentioned in the movie.
Well,
I don't know how we would have assumed that.
Well, and off on another subject, just to kind of show you how the dialogue went, I wrote down something else with the twins, that they're walking along, and one of them's like, "Dude, would you do Would you do someone that had a sex change if, as long as it didn't have one? And the guy's like, well, yeah, as long as they were cut.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell? I mean, that's a stupid dialogue for a movie.
Listen, it was just trying to set up, you know, these characters. No, I have no freaking clue.
I mean,
but you're right. It was annoying, especially since as they were going down, they were almost, I mean, and maybe they were trying to play up the fact that they are twins and they don't want to be away from each other. But it's almost like they could read each other's minds. They're finishing each other's sentences. It just got annoying. And the thing is they were only on the show for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't,
and they got annoying, which is hard to do, unless you're Gilbert Gottfried or Bobcat Goldthwait or Pauly Shore.
There's quite a few. So I don't hate this movie. I don't. No matter, you know, even though I just have higher expectations because the rest were so good.
Yeah.
That this is the weakest. So, you know, I give this an AMC. Okay. Actually, I would give it a red box.
Okay, I give it a red box for no other reason that for a freaking buck, I would watch this. It was entertaining. The effects were good. The story was meh. Besides those big loopholes that we found.
Well, and I don't know how 6, 7, and 8 go, but I don't even know. Could you skip this one and still catch on to what's going on with the rest of them?
Yeah, I don't. You know what the thing is in 6, 7, and 8, it doesn't really talk much about the history. If I remember right, it doesn't really go back into the history of the Hellraiser mythos as much. So you could skip this one. I don't know. I would say watch it.
Well, it's part. If you're gonna watch 6, 7, and 8, if you're gonna watch them all, you're gonna watch this one anyway. I'm just wondering. If on its own, like to get rid of it, if you'd lose anything, and it doesn't sound like
I don't think you would. However, it's almost worth it just for the memory count.
Well, the memory count was only 3, but their quality.
Yes.
I mean, it's good.
Yeah. That lady, Valentina Vargas, who played Angelique.
She's pretty.
She's not ugly. And I went and looked at other movies she was in, and it was all foreign. So,
there was memory counts in those foreign movies.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's good. I'm trying to see if there was anything else.
All right,
else.
So let's just throw this out at you. The girl from Wreck or Valentina?
Wreck.
Me too.
Absolutely. I don't have to think twice about that.
Well, only because she's...
My wife? Jeez.
Only because she's younger.
Yeah, well,
Valentina
that's
by now
true.
Is probably well into her 50s.
Probably,
I don't know. She's probably not that damn old.
No, I'm trying to see if there's anything else in that I have... Nah, nothing really. Nothing really that big.
Yeah, this wasn't a big. This didn't impress me a lot. I mean, the thing is, I'd seen it before, and I remember really liking it from, 1996, like right after I graduated high school. I saw it and I thought it was bad to the bone.
Yeah.
But now, as I watch it, and especially watching them in succession with the other ones, it just does not stack up.
It doesn't. No wonder why that guy put Alan Smitty. Honestly,
no, for real.
Couple things on this then. So the memory count was 3. What did I learn from this movie? Some people will do anything to get to America.
Yeah. Why don't you expound on that for a
minute? Well, what happens is Jacques, who's been having this Angelique demon to himself for the last century.
Holy hell.
And just doing whatever
I would
wants
do whatever she says.
I know. She says she finds out that the bloodline of the toy maker is in America. So they're not in America, but
right.
She wants to go. And so he's like, no, you're not going to America. And she's like, is that your final answer, Regis?
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, that's my final answer. So she ends up being able to kill him because he got in the way of hell.
Right.
Which is you need to kill the bloodline because he's trying to kill hell.
Right.
So anyway, so she rips his heart out.
You know, one thing. Because
she wants to go to America.
Well, oh, yeah, that's deep. Of course, I don't think ripping a heart out is that big a deal for her.
No.
She is the daughter of Leviathan. And we do get a shot of her in Cenobite form.
She's
great.
She's hot. Even in Cenobite form.
I would, I think I still would.
I'd Cenobite that bite.
Oh my gosh.
Did I tell you I figured out you can do that with anything?
No, give me another example.
I'd hard that drive.
What are you, looking around the room here?
Yeah, I could do anything. I'd electric that guitar. You can do that with any, two-word phrase of anything. Try it. I dare it. Just try it.
I'd Sam that check. It's...
I'd movie that poster.
Oh, good one.
You could do anything. So anyway, sorry about that.
That's funny.
Okay, so let's see. What else did I learn? Star Wars Razor was pretty good.
Star Wars Razor?
Yeah, it's Hellraiser. Star Wars Razor.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
because right.
they go to the Star Wars there.
Yeah.
All right, that was pretty lame.
You know, that looked like, to me, it kind of reminded me a little bit of Event Horizon. Not nearly as good.
No, not even close.
You know, and the thing is the special effects up on the ship, like the computer-generated, lament configuration that was being opened by the thing, looked like a pile of crap. But you know, but the practical effects, like the deaths and this, are pretty good.
Yeah, no, all right.
I mean, well, they're, I don't know. I enjoy a good old fashioned, maybe a little cheesy twist of the face flesh. You know, something like that. It's good.
No, it's good. And then another thing I learned is the demons can be tricked by holograms. We talked about that. Right. And the last thing I learned was that the Keymaster is in tons of movies.
The Keymaster is that dog we talked about.
So he goes back into it. All right, I got a 6 degrees. Adam Scott, who plays Jacques, was in Step Brothers with John C. Reilly. He was the older brother.
We've used John C. Reilly before.
I know. But I go a different way, I think. Magnolia to Tom Cruise.
So far, so good.
Tom Cruise was in Legend.
Thank you.
Tim Curry.
Okay.
And Tim Curry was in McKell's Navy with Bruce Campbell.
You know, Tim Curry is an actor that I would love to see more of in horror movies.
Yeah, he is.
I love that guy.
That's a true statement, that.
You know, in Legend, after seeing Legend, I do not like the movie Legend. In fact, I really do not like
it. Why
don't
you like it?
I don't know. It's just too
girly. I liked
it
when I was younger, but
when I was younger.
But there's some weird shit.
I've actually tried to watch it within the last year.
I did. It was on demand.
Was it?
And I watched it with my daughter.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I would watch it. But what's his name in that? Is the devil? Tim Curry?
Yeah, Tim Curry.
Freaking awesome.
Very good.
You know, he was also in Stephen King's It is Pennywise.
Oh, really? I've not seen that.
Oh, that's something that you need to see.
Okay.
You know, it's actually kind of cheesy. It was amazing.
That's what I heard.
But the thing is he is creepy in that. If you're not scared of clowns now, you will be after that.
Yeah, I don't like clowns.
You know, and I just like everything.
He's in a lot of shows. The first time I ever saw him was in Clue.
Yeah, right.
As the butler, and he was great. And so then I've seen him every once in a while. He's good.
I like that guy. He actually does a lot of audiobook reading. He does a great job.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a great voice for it.
Yeah.
We just need to get him in more horror flicks.
I need to take some training so I don't sound like Fozzie the effing bear.
Fozzie the bear.
I know. That's all right. So
you,
good.
You know what? We love you just the way you are.
I appreciate that.
Even if you are a big furry and wearing an ascot. Freaking. Anyway.
Good stuff. Let's get on to number 5.
On to number 5 already.
I know. Wow. Well, how far are we into this thing?
We are into 55 minutes, so.
That's it?
Yeah.
This is great.
Oh, you know what the thing is we're right, basically on schedule for, as long as our normal episodes are.
Yeah, no, this is good.
I'm glad we get to talk about Hellraiser 5. You know what? Should we play a song?
Let's do another song.
Let's just throw in a song.
Let's
here.
Do another song.
Hey.
Hellraiser 5, and by the way, this is my favorite by far of the three that we're reviewing
today. I agree. Me too.
Detective Thorne.
It's Daphne. And the girl you were with last night.
This is my direct line. How did you...
Please, it's not the motel. Oh my God. Oh God. Please help me. Please help me.
Okay, just wait. Just slow down.
Hellraiser 5 Inferno came out in 2000. IMDb rating is 5.4, which is a full point over Hellraiser Bloodline, which got a 4.4, but still well above my threshold of suckiness at 3.0. So, anyway. This film was directed by Scott Derrickson and was written by Paul Harris Boardman. We actually get an interesting fact on this one. This is the first Hellraiser film that went direct to video, which is kind of weird, because this one was better than... I think it's better than the last two. I mean, I'm sure that there's budgetary reasons or whatever, and it just kept, the business just worked out that way. But anyway, so we have Craig Schaefer, who plays Joseph Thorne, Nicholas Turturro, who played Tony Nononen, James Remar is Paul Gregory, Doug Bradley is Pinhead, and Michael Seamus Wiles as Mr. Parmaji, who was the cowboy.
That guy's a freaky cowboy.
Do you want me to just read another synopsis?
Yep.
Okay, real quick. Inferno, starring Craig Schaefer as Joseph Thorne, a Denver City police detective. Thorne is a brilliant cop, but he's also addicted to drugs, prostitutes, and neglecting his wife and child. Wait a second, let me read that again. Brilliant cop, but he's addicted to drugs, prostitutes, and neglecting his wife and child.
Brilliant!
Brilliant. When Thorne and his partner, Tony Nonan, are given a tough case involving the bloody mutilation of a murder and murder of an ex-high school classmate of Thorne's, a strange ancient-looking box is discovered at the crime scene. After a night of debauchery with a hooker, Thorn opens the box and things start to get weird. Wait a second. So basically, he's this guy that's on drugs, goes to a murder scene, and then goes with a hooker, and then things start getting weird. Anyway, he begins seeing men without faces everywhere, and Cenobite demons begin appearing to him in visions. What's worst, Thorn feels like he's losing his mind, and as the body count starts to rise, all evidence starts pointing at him.
Except for the shit he planted.
What?
Except for the evidence he planted.
Planted? I think he said planet.
No.
I think this film was a little bit different than all the ones previous.
Mm-hmm.
Craig Schaefer, who we've seen in a lot of stuff. I mean, it's actually a really big name. I don't know. Is he still a big name actor?
He was when I looked up for Six Degrees, he's done a lot of TV.
He was in another Clive Barker film, Nightbreed,
which
is based on Cabal by Clive Barker. And he was in The Program. He was in A River Runs Through It.
Yep, that's where I got my 6 degrees, is that one.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he's do we dare say he's A-list?
No.
Oh, bummer.
No, he's not A-list.
He touched A-list when he and Brad Pitt had that little fling after filming. Oh, wait, I'm making that up.
I think he definitely, I recognized him and all that kind of stuff, and I was like, oh, cool, somebody I...
Remember The Program?
Yeah, that show.
We were in high school and playing football. We thought that movie was the shit.
Yeah. Not the shit enough to go lay down in the middle of the road.
You know, they cut that part out.
Well, I'm sure they have, because people have done it and died.
I don't know.
Freaking idiots.
Anyway, I just think, every time I think of that movie, I think of how retarded we were in high school football. Give us your thoughts, man.
I really like how this is something different. And when I say something different, what I mean by is that you have Hellraiser. It's kind of like, okay, someone's opened the box, and now we have to take care of all the shit after someone opens the box.
Right.
This is about what happens when you open the box.
Exactly.
And that's why I like this show, because it's like, okay, you're going to see someone. What is that pleasure and pain thing about? Uh-huh. You're now going to see what this is all about.
Exactly.
And I liked it. It kind of set out a little bit of a mystery, even though we kind of knew what was going on. We talked about the engineer who was this weird-looking thing in number one.
Right.
And, you know, he kind of, with technology the way that it is, you have to, it's something different now, which is fine. Right. It's a guy without a face.
Right.
With the Spider-Man tongue that, all that kind of stuff.
The black Spider-Man?
Yeah.
I'm not being racist here.
No. I'm just the Spider-Man that is black.
Right.
On the outside. I don't know. Anyways. I don't know how to explain it, but we're not being racist.
Right.
Anyways, and so, yeah, I thought it was good that way that you get this story going on. But I'll tell you what I really liked about this is from pretty much the first minute that you meet this guy, I'm like, I want that guy to get ripped apart.
He definitely gets a kick in the balls.
He played a weird character because he not only was the guy that you wanted to get it, but he's the hero of the show, so he's trying to figure out what's going on. So you're kind of pulling for different things along the way.
In the first part of the movie, I can't remember exactly how it started, but wasn't he playing chess against a guy in the gym?
Yeah.
And you could tell this guy's a prick.
Answers his cell phone. Yeah.
He's just kind of messing around.
Played right into my game, professor.
Yeah, exactly. Just kind of a pretentious dick.
Yep.
You know, goes in there. Goes, and he showers, and as he's getting ready, takes a snort of some kind of drug. Anyway, he takes a little snort off the drugs, and then he kind of goes to his job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just shows up at the office, and then he gets a mystery phone call from the hooker is that right?
Yep. Well, you talked about how he saw his old high school buddy with his skin ripped off.
Right.
He caught a case, and he ended up, the dude plays with evidence all the time. You see that he took money out of the guy's wallet and changed it to $100 instead of $400.
Right.
And he saw this puzzle box, and he didn't know what it was, so he pocketed it. I mean, he's
completely
crooked, and you can see that all the way through.
Uh-huh.
Well, anyways, then he goes, and he goes home for a minute.
Right.
And his wife's sick, and so he's like, oh, are you feeling better yet? Oh, it's kind of okay. And his daughter wants him to stay. He's like, I caught a case, I gotta go. And that's when he goes and gets a prostitute, gives her the drugs that he ripped off and made disappear with this little magic trick.
Right.
And then the next morning, that's when he ends up going to the office and he gets the call.
You know, one thing that you forgot to mention there is when his daughter, you know, wants to keep him home, and he said, he didn't lie to her when he said, I've got a case. Of course, it was a case of gonorrhea because he just went and did it with a hooker. But nonetheless, he was telling the truth.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yep.
But this starts the crime mystery, and this one was more of a mystery crime thriller. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a Hellraiser, so you're going to see gore, you're going to get scares, and you're going to see Cenobites,
which they were freaky, man.
Yeah, these ones seem a little cleaner to you, a little bit like the.
What do you mean cleaner?
In the original ones, you know, Pinhead had dirty teeth, and you know, he just kind of looked dirty, and you know, blood was dried, you know, here and there,
yeah.
And he kind of crusty. But in these ones, they kind of seem clean. There were a couple of new ones. First of all, my favorite new one was the Half a Man,
yeah.
Which was kind of the Chatterer who was just the torso up.
He reminded me of the little toy on Toy Story.
Which one?
That's that exact same thing.
I am not pulling it up in my brain.
Sorry, we're referencing a children's movie, but well, yeah, there was the same thing. It's this little toy that has just the arms, and he's a big, strong buff
what?
Dude.
What? That's a little disturbing.
Well, all the toys that are in that Sid room, the Sid's room.
Well, you know what? We're going to have to save this conversation for our other podcast, the Children's Story
Twinkle,
Hour.
Twinkle, Little Star podcast. Sorry.
We run on the side.
People will know what I'm talking about.
Anyway. And we actually get a couple of new Cenobites. Our twin hot Cenobites? What? They don't have... I don't know. They got bod.
They're not hot. I didn't notice that. And you know what? When you talk about clean, I think what we're talking about here is that somebody figured out that faceless monsters are really scary.
Exactly.
And they
none
are.
Of them do.
And they are.
None of them have eyes.
No.
They
even, you know, the engineer, all of them. And they have the long tongues.
Well,
they
weren't
scary.
As, like, slimy. You remember Butterball was slimy.
Yeah.
I don't know. They just seemed to have to be Cenobites that just got out of the shower, maybe. So
yeah.
They weren't quite as edgy as the other ones.
That's
but you know what? That did not bother me. Even Pinhead was a little bit cleaner in this one. I don't know. I wonder why they bought. I wonder if that's just me, or if they did that, why would they do that?
Well, maybe it's another step up in the cinematography.
Maybe
department, because I think they did some computer graphics on this one.
That's
the
true.
The tongues were computer graphics,
and that's true. I will say though that the grungy look of them in Hellraiser 1 was, I thought was the best portrayal.
Or it added to it, and hopefully on the remake they're going to go back to that. And realize that, you know, if we're going to make a full-length production that's going into theaters, it's got to be back to the nitty-gritty, dirty, scary Cenobites.
Well, you know, and that's kind of been with remakes, that's kind of how it's gone, though. I mean, Dawn of the Dead was, the 2004's Dawn of the Dead was bloody, it was scary, it was dirty. You know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remakes were gross. But then again, so were the originals.
Right.
Halloween.
That's one that sticks out in my mind is
Halloween was
shocking.
A lot more brutal in the remake.
I still have not seen the original.
Oh, really? The original is actually...
There's no blood in it.
I was going to say there's no blood. It kind of works off the suspense angle. You know, and it's actually great, and you should check it out. I would say we should do a show on that just because it'll give us an excuse to watch.
Well, I meant to tell you let me borrow a copy of it from the Cadaver Lab Library, but it was the bonus features.
That was it?
Yeah.
Really? But anyway, so back to Hellraiser 5. Throwing in the mystery element of this, I thought was great.
I did too. It kept your attention. It's not dragging out the same stuff of people getting torn apart.
Exactly.
And that's all it is.
It's more of a story than, we open the box, you know, let's scramble, figure out what to do. And you know, that story really worked in 1 and 2, 3 a little less, 4 was not really about that as much, you know. I mean, it was, but it was 4 was different. But then this one, which added a whole new element to the series.
Well, he opens the box, and the typical stuff did not happen.
Right.
He opens it because he ends up going to his childhood room.
Right.
So you know that he's now opened it, and like the little psychologist guy says later, well, if you open the box, you're still here. When you open the box, you get destroyed.
Right.
And you're still here, so something that means something's going on.
Right. The story is the fact that Thorne, I almost called him Aaron Boone, because that's his name in... Nightbreed. But Thorne is trying to figure out who this engineer is who is going around killing people. There's actually a serial murderer going along killing people and leaving a child's finger with the fingerprint burned off at every crime scene. You know, it's kind of a calling card. As he does this, he kind of pisses off everyone he basically comes in contact with. There's even a part where when he first had the hooker and then the hooker ends up, you know, strung up in the shower and all cut up and whatever. He talks to his partner, who is Nick Turturro, who basically goes in with them and they talk about not telling anybody. They clean up the whole thing. But just as an insurance policy, Aaron Boone, what's his name again?
Thorn
leaves a couple of pieces of evidence that points to him, to his partner. And, you know, it's just kind of, that's just the type of guy he is. So, you know, as he goes along, tries to solve this mystery, he's pissing everybody off.
Yeah.
We find out, he finally meets a psychologist who he's ordered to go talk to because of, you know, some of the psychological things he's going through. And he's been talking to a bunch of people who just think he's, you know, going a little bit crazy. They assume it's from the stress of the job. He goes to this psychologist, and the psychologist pulls out this file of another cop who basically ended up going crazy because he tried to find the engineer. And that's where the story goes.
Nice.
He actually, this cop that the psychologist talks about ended up blowing his brains out.
That's right.
Because it just got to be too much for him.
I thought there was some good symbolism in here, too, and maybe I looked too deep into the movie. But if you look at his family, how they died, not that we're spoiling it. But his wife and his daughter, they froze.
Right.
And it's kind of like he froze them out.
Oh, yeah.
And then also his partner, he died by having knives in his back.
Right. Oh, right.
So he got stabbed in the back. So I thought there was some symbolism with how people around him were dying, which is the hell that he's going through.
Right. That makes you think that any time, basically, that Pinhead showed up, maybe it wasn't every time, but it all of a sudden started snowing, you know, in that room or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that was just kind of to remind us that, you know, the hell that that Pinhead lives in is not the fire and brimstone, but, you know, but it's a cold, lonely, desolate type of place.
Well, and we find, and one of the reasons why we like this movie is that it's your own personal hell.
Exactly.
It's what you regret. It's what you can't change. And I can't think of anything worse. I mean, if you think about your life, and if you were to, you know, what did I do today? And if I had to live this day over and over, and it just, I didn't do anything worthwhile. I mean, that
well, I
suck.
Personally would learn how to play the piano, try to figure out how to hit on a certain chick. And, well, I'm just saying, if I had to live this day over and over.
Well, he woke up with a prostitute in his room. I mean, there's lots of ways you can go with that.
So it's a great start. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not going to say that out loud, but I'm just saying. There's some things, just some options ahead of you there.
Hey, sorry about the Groundhog's Day reference there.
Yeah. Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. Actually, I have something that I learned from this movie.
Oh, let's hear it.
I said last time that Star Wars Razor was good. I have Groundhog's Razor was good this time.
Right.
So that's funny.
Nice. Wow. That's wild.
I have other ones. Are we done talking about this one?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like there's a lot more to talk about because this is one of the deepest ones.
Well, but it's kind of like what we're alluding to, and I think if we go ahead and spoil it, you know.
I do not want to spoil this.
Okay, then let's not.
Okay, let me tell you why, though, because I think if someone were to have it spoiled for them before they see the end, then it would just kind of not be very meaningless.
That's a good point.
And I can watch it again and again because only because I was affected by it the first time I saw it. You know, and the first time I saw it, I didn't pick up on a lot of stuff, you know, and now with subsequent watches, you know, I'm starting to say, okay. Mm-hmm. So that's what that was.
Then I think we probably ought to stop talking about it.
Yeah,
honestly,
okay.
I definitely give this a bone saw.
Okay.
This one gets a bone saw for me.
I give it a buy.
Do you?
The only thing keeping it from a bone saw is at the end, it got a little confusing. There were a couple of things that it took me a couple of times to figure out. Maybe it deserves a bone saw.
We'll have to talk about it offline so we don't give it away.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see what you're talking about. Don't go into it because we don't want to spoil it. But I'll be interested to hear about that.
All right.
I give it a bone saw just because it was again, another original story.
That
followed all the way through that I thought, gosh dang it, how many more directions can they come at me with a Hellraiser tag on it?
Exactly.
And they delivered. It was good. I thought that it was creepy. I thought that the actors did a really good job. The storyline was really good. Characters were developed, and I thought it was compelling. So, yeah, I'd give this one a bone saw. Well, here's what I learned from this movie. People that play speed chess are dirty cops who cheat on their wives.
Everybody.
Every
who
damn
does.
One of them. People without eyes have black tongues.
You know what? And that is true in every case.
I know. I'm blanket statements here is what I learned about this stuff. I already talked about Groundhog Razor was a good movie.
Yep.
And there are times that I can cheer for Pinhead.
Oh, yeah.
I actually was hoping that Pinhead was going to win on this one because that guy is such an a-hole.
He was.
So I have six degrees on this. Craig Schaefer, who played Joe, was in A River Runs Through It with Brad Pitt, who was in Ocean's 11 with Julia Roberts, who was in American Sweethearts with Catherine Zeta-Jones, who was in The Terminal with Tom Hanks, who was in The Lady Killers with Bruce Campbell.
Do you feel dirty?
I a little bit, but I'm just trying to get there how I can with different stuff. I'm going to have to go to TV shows with him or video games with him next because I'm running out of movies.
He's been in a lot of TV shows with a lot of people.
A lot of guest stars.
We'll still, since we're only in episode 10 now, we got a long way to go, so maybe we'll have to start going that way.
We'll have to double up and try and get there, creatively. Do we have anything on the forums that we need to talk about?
You know, we've had a lot of action on the forums. I'm on there every day. I get bored at work, and I just will go hop up there.
Well, and I found out that my company has a firewall, and so they can monitor exactly which web pages that I'm on.
Oh, really?
So I have to log all the way off out of my secure network to go view that stuff. So when I take a break, I run upstairs to my desktop, and then that's when I'm able to do that. So I thought I was going to be on there all the time, but I'm not.
Ah, okay. What about when you're putting together the promo and stuff? They don't see any of that? It's just web traffic?
I do that upstairs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do that on my desktop. I downloaded the programs for that, and I just do it on my desktop.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it's all right. You just have to walk up some stairs. Really not that big of a difference.
Oh,
it goes back to that lazy test.
Are you kidding me, though?
I wish I had the elevator to make it upstairs.
Well, it's not just that, but sometimes I'll be sitting at the couch right here, 2 feet away from the computer, and I'll just be like, damn it, I got to go check something.
Yeah. No, but I'm trying to think if there was anything interesting I read on the forums. Well, we had one guy ask how we do this. Guys,
how we do the podcast.
This is not rocket science. If it was, we would not be doing it. Luckily, Mike knows a thing or two about computers because that's his line of work.
You know, the thing is it's not. You don't even have to know a lot about computers. All you have to do is download Audacity and spend 10 minutes learning about that.
You showed me one time how to make those clips and how to save and import MP3s and stuff, and I was able to do it, and I've been able to do it ever since.
Now,
and I am not computer literate.
Well, and the thing is I probably know about 5% of Audacity's capabilities.
Well, I think I've learned a couple of things, even just going on your own, because you can find it, like creating the effects.
Right.
But no, it's fun to do, but it's not that hard. If people want to give it a try, I mean, feel free.
Let us, if you need help, let us know. We don't.
We have nothing to hide by any means. It's all zipped up behind layers.
Oh yeah, man. And I just want to mention one more time that I know I've mentioned this practically every episode, but go to the Cemetery Things podcast. Great book. It's free. It's on a podcast format. It's a win-win for you and the author Keith Latch.
And go out and vote for us. We like to have votes, and I'll go ahead and beg for them this time.
You know what? And I will. You know what? The one thing that makes me feel the best about this is when somebody gives us a good review on iTunes. I don't know why I read that and I'm like, sweet.
Yeah, I read those too, and I don't think we have a bad one out there yet.
No.
Now, granted, that 7 of the 10 are ones that I wrote under different names.
Well, no wonder.
Just kidding. No, I haven't done that. But no, please go out and do that. And
Do you kind of feel like a jerk asking people to go out and vote for us?
I don't feel like a jerk because I think if I didn't feel like we were putting out something worthwhile, number one, we wouldn't keep doing it if we thought we sucked, and if we heard we sucked, we wouldn't shove in people's faces and keep doing it. Mm-hmm. But you know,
they don't have to listen.
I think with how many people have said, "Hey, you guys do a great job," we get calls about it. I mean, it's just one more step to go take a vote. Just go vote. I mean,
and here's another thing. One thing that came up on the forums is one guy was talking about how a couple of other podcasts were talking crap about other podcasts.
You know, why would do that?
Not us. I mean, not necessarily.
I know, but
us.
Why would you do that at all?
The thing is, I guess, I don't know. They don't have to listen.
Yeah.
You know? If you don't like it, sorry. Hey,
different folks, different strokes. I mean, there's some people that, I'm sure we've offended people.
Sure.
I know we've offended people. Not that they've told us, but I'm sure with some of the crap we say.
Uh-huh.
So just turn it off if you don't like it. I don't know why I have to talk crap.
By the way, you remember that guy that called in? I can't remember what episode it was.
It was
after the Exorcist episode.
I think it was episode 6 is when we did it.
I don't remember, but
it was episode 6.
He was this tough, like, Brooklyn-sounded guy, and we kind of made fun of him a little bit because, you know, all in fun, just to
nobody was making fun. We wanted to give him more credit to himself.
Right. Well, he basically just said how it scared the crap out of him. I actually was listening to another podcast, and he got on there.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, and he was just he just was there were, it was a podcast with two guys
uh-huh.
and one of them kept interrupting the other, and the guy was like, you know, you need to quit stepping on this guy's dick, you know, every 2 seconds. You need to let him talk, blah, 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 blah.
Really?
I'm like, wow, we kind of got off easy. I'm glad that he didn't call back and try to waste us.
Wow.
But,
Wow. Yeah, no kidding. Jeez.
Anyway.
Nah, he knows. If someone made fun of me, I'd laugh it off.
Yeah, well.
After I kicked their ass. No, just kidding.
Well, I found a couple of other people's forums that there are people who I think take it a little too seriously. I don't think.
What do you mean, take it to, like,
meaning
moderate, like hosts taking it too seriously?
No, not a host. Like, just like people, like listeners taking it a little too seriously.
Geez.
Like, I don't know, just not like on the forums, just not taking jokes and stuff like that. And I hope everyone realizes out there that we don't take ourselves too seriously.
Listen, if I'll announce in front of thousands of people that I had the best smelling crank in high school. I'm not above anything. All right.
The thing is that's the truth. You're just saying you're just you know that's not a brag.
Did you verify that with sources?
No, I did not.
Okay,
verify.
Good.
I did verify it. I did ask one dude, and he. But anyway, sorry to go off on that little bit of rant. But you know what? We're just having a good time.
Yeah.
You know.
And you know what? If people say if people want to make fun of us, that's fine.
Yeah.
We have too much fun to worry about making fun of other people.
You know, and as long as
plus, there's a lot of nice guys out there. I mean, all the podcasts I listen to are great.
Oh yeah, there are a lot. You know, and the thing is there have been a lot that have just helped us out a lot. Anyway, I don't want to bore everybody, but let's go ahead and put in a death scene here. And there you go. There's your death scene. You know, in the past 2 days, we've actually had episode 9 and episode 8 win.
So did the person officially get on?
He did.
Did he really? Who was it?
Come on. It's embarrassing.
No, it's not. Who is it?
It was Sean from Angry Gnome Comics.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So,
nice. All right, good.
He got on, and I'm going to send him out some loot.
Yeah, I thought that last one from Shivers was going to be so hard.
Dude, that one was guessed the day after we
I know. Just because someone was like, this one, I think it's hard. But we'll have to
10?
See. For episode 10, if this gets guessed right away, I'm going ultra, ultra. Like, I'm including a couple of little lines just so the people can try and guess a little bit. I may have to go away from even that.
What? Don't you want people to win our fabulous
Well, I do,
prizes?
But with how many people are listening now, it's kind of like, well, one in however many people are going to be able to get it.
That's true.
So, I don't know.
I don't mind. I'm just glad people are guessing, getting up on the forums.
I know, I love it.
Gives us an excuse to make somebody sign up.
Yeah. Dr. Brains. I don't know what that guy's real name is, but he's going crazy on there.
Oh yeah.
Lots of people are.
Exactly. And by the way, we appreciate that. You know, I'll tell you what, it's so fun for me to get on during work. I swear that I'm on there constantly. there are people out there who think I'm a stupid ass that wouldn't know life because I'm all constantly on the forums.
Do you get emails to your mic at Cadaver?
From time to time.
I have never gotten one.
Well,
ever.
Also because it goes to Mic at Cadaver if you use the...
All of them do?
Well, if you use the forum, or not the forum, the contact us on the site.
Oh.
And that's where most of the emails
come
from.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, that goes to me. Would somebody send Sam an email, please?
Please, because I feel lonely.
Sam at Cadaver.
I don't even care what it is as long as it's not pornographic. I mean, anything.
Well, as long as the pornography is not of men.
No, I don't feel bad for myself.
So now that we've chit-chatted our way into making everyone fall asleep there at the end, I just want to have everybody go up and visit cadaverlab.com. I want to thank Big Winters gave us another review for us site.
Oh, good.
It is a Friday the 13th.
Oh, I read that one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'd like it. Yeah, that was good. I thought it was...
He's never seen it before.
Oh, really?
That was a review after the first time he saw it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't catch that. I thought he was the... Okay. I get it now, now that I've... Okay.
Well, it's wild to me that he hasn't seen that yet, but he's young. He's a younger guy.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, so...
Oh, that's cool, man.
Anyway, yeah, we appreciate that. All the submissions. Bet old Mikey for helping us out with the comic stuff. Email us at feedback. You know, I'm only going to give one email address out today.
That's fine.
And that's Sam's.
Oh, jeez.
Email Sam, would you, please? I'm just teasing. Call our voicemail. Hopefully, we'll give you a little bit more time to send in a voicemail besides more than 2 days. We'll probably be getting a lot more calls, and
please leave a message. It is not incorrect. We've changed the greeting that we don't scare anybody away that wants to leave a message for Cleo Torres or Ferb Herger. Or Jenny Tolls.
Right.
So those are the three that are up now. I have a whole list of other ones. But we don't want to scare people away. They're going to do that. So I think it just says leave a message.
Yeah.
So just do.
You know, and this is all in good fun in the spirit of Halloween. Pulling pranks.
That's exactly right.
Having people waste their time at work that they're getting paid for.
That's right.
To call some stupid assholes about that. Anyway, call the voicemail. 206-339-2730. You know, we had a little bit of problems with the voicemail.
Yeah, we did.
Week.
Apologize.
And maybe that was, So if it's busy, that basically means that the circuits are a little bit busy. But give us a call. 206-339-2730. And for the Cadaver Lab podcast, we will see you
later.